Welcome to installment number 260 of Sefer Mitzvahs from the Rambam. Today's portion contains four commandments. Positive commandment 247, regulating a redef, that one should kill a person who is attempting or in the middle of trying to murder another one. Also, prohibition number 293, a prohibition not to have mercy on this pursuer, this redef. Prohibition 297 is not to stand idly by while your neighbor is being murdered or in another fatal danger. And finally, positive commandment 182, to designate and set aside ore miklat, or cities of refuge, that should be cities of protection for a person that has murdered unintentionally. The first two commandments of today's portion relate to the law of a redef. A redef means literally a pursuer. A person is chasing after another in order to kill him. What do we do in such a case? We learned previously in Prohibition 292 that if someone observes a murder, let us say two witnesses observe a murder, they are forbidden from executing the capital punishment themselves, but rather are required to bring the suspect or the murderer to the Jewish court, whereupon he will be tried and only thereafter put to death. However, this applies only if the damage has not been done. If it is before the murder has taken place, we are commanded to save the victim from his potential assailant, from the redef, the pursuer. The law is that even if we have to kill this pursuer in order to save the victim, it is an obligation of the one observing this attack to even kill the pursuer before he does his damage to the intended victim. Both commandments relate to this law. The positive commandment that we must save the person who is being pursued, positive commandment 247, and prohibition 293, that we must not have mercy on the pursuer and thereby refuse to damage him and allow the pursued person to be hurt. Both of these commandments derive from the same verse in Chumash, the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 25, verse 12. In the previous section, the Chumash describes a fight which broke out between two men, whereupon a woman came, the wife of one of these two men, and attacked or grabbed the one who was attacking her husband, b'mevushav, in his private parts, which, as we will see from the Sifri, is used as an example for any injury which could cause fatal damage. In verse 12, the Chumash states, "Bekatzeisa es kapa, you should chop off her hand, leisoches einecha, and do not have mercy upon her." The positive commandment to cut off her hand is our positive commandment 247, and the prohibition 293 is not to have mercy. The Rambam quotes the Sifri, which explains exactly how the commandment is learned out from this verse. The Sifri asks, why did the Chumash pick an example of her grabbing the man in his private parts, the Mavushov? And the Sifri answers that this is a part of the body which could involve a fatal injury. So therefore, if the person who is pursuing, in this case the woman, is trying to inflict fatal damage, then the law is that you can even chop off her hand. If it is necessary to dissuade her and prevent her from injuring the man in such a way, then we are even entitled to remove one of her organs. As the Rambam gives the example, whether it should be a hand, or a leg, or an eye, or any other organ, if we could save the victim by removing or crippling this organ, then we are obligated to do so. However, as we mentioned, if necessary, you can even kill the pursuer. How do we see this from the verse? The verse only says, "Vekatzeisa kapa," you could cut off her hand, meaning you could cripple her or take away one of her organs. Where do we learn you could even kill her if necessary? The Chumash answers, this is one of the lessons we learn from the end of the verse, that you should not have mercy upon her. From the first part, we learn that you can even chop off her hand. From the second part, we learn that you should not have mercy in any case. If necessary, you could even kill her in order to prevent her from inflicting fatal damage upon her husband's assailant. However, the law is that if you could save the intended victim with a lesser measure, for example, by crippling one organ, and instead you kill the person, then the one who killed the assailant is worthy of the death penalty and is put to death. That since they could have saved the assailant with a lesser measure and instead went to the more extreme measure of killing, therefore it's considered, this person is considered to be the murderer. The Rambam tells us that why is it that the verse picked out an example of a woman, the wife of this particular man who was being assaulted? The Rambam explains that this is just a normal case. Dibar akasuv b'heiva. This is just an example. However, any case similar to this one, where there is an assailant trying to take away the life of another, which in this case is the woman trying to take away the life of her husband's assailant, in such a case, we are entitled to take away one of the organs, and even if necessary, to take away the life of the assailant, which is in this case the woman. And this is not merely the Torah giving us permission to do such an act. It is rather an obligation on the Jew to do this. And we can see this clearly by the fact that there is a prohibition involved. Should one stand by idly and allow this attack to take place, one is violating Prohibition 293. This, of course, applies only if the redef, the assailant, is trying to kill the victim. If the victim would not be killed, then we have no right to kill the attacker, and such a killing would be considered bloodshed. We can only kill the redef, the assailant, if he is intending and has the ability to kill the intended victim. However, if death is the motive of the assailant, then we are allowed and even obligated to kill the assailant, even though he or she might be a young person, even below bar bas mitzvah. Since we are trying to save the intended victim, it does not matter who the assailant is. As the Rambam gives his famous explanation regarding the Jewish view of abortion, that according to Jewish law, abortion is strictly prohibited. However, let's say that in the course of childbirth, we see that the woman's life, the mother's life, is being endangered by her child, and she might die. The Rambam says we have the right then, and perhaps even the obligation, to kill the child and save the mother's life, since the child is considered to be pursuing the mother, and therefore we can save the mother's life at the expense of the child's life. However, the Rambam says this applies only before the child's head has emerged. Once the child's head has emerged, it is considered to be a natural event already, and one is not allowed to touch the child. It should also be mentioned that as the Achreinim and the Halachic authorities have explained the Rambam's view, this is only if the child's birth process and growth has a direct effect to cause death to the mother. But if, for example, the child's existence would affect some metabolic balance or blood condition, and this would indirectly cause the mother's death, then the child is not considered a pursuer, a redef, and we are strictly forbidden from aborting it. The Rambam explains that this, that we can save the redef if he intends to kill, is also present in another case. If the attacker intends to do one of the sexual offenses prohibited by the Torah, for example, a homosexual attack, Mishkav Zachar, or he intends to rape a woman who is engaged, a Naira Merasa, which we learn from the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 22, verse 26 and 27. Verse 27 states that the woman cried out, "V'ein Meshila," there was no one to save her. And we learn that this, that the verse indicates there was no one to save her, is a clear lesson that if there was someone to save her, that person would be obligated to save her. And therefore, this assailant, this intended rapist, could even be killed in order to save his victim. And the law is compared directly in the verse to the case of a murderer. Ki kasher yokum ish al reyehu ratzachi nefesh, when one person tries to murder another, kein hadavar hazeh, so to this is the same case, and we are obligated to save the victim. The details are explained in the 8th chapter of Sanhedrin. Prohibition 297 is closely related. As it says in the book of Leviticus, chapter 19, verse 16, Lei samed al dam reyecha, do not stand idly by while your brother's blood is being shed. For example, let's say someone should be drowning in the water, and you are able to swim in and save him. The law is that you are obligated to do so, and should you not, you are violating this prohibition. So too, let's say you should hear a non-Jew, for example, planning to kill a Jew. If you have the capability of persuading him or otherwise preventing him from doing this murder, and you do not, you are violating this prohibition. And so too, if you see someone attacked by murderers or attacked by a wild animal or even a redev chasing after him and you do not assist the person, you are transgressing this prohibition. Although this law might seem to be very obvious, it has come into striking importance in our generation today that people do not want to get involved in a crime being committed. And it has become apparent that according to civil law in almost every state, there is no prohibition, no violation being done, even if a young child should, God forbid, be drowning in a 1-inch pool of water, and it's a little baby that cannot lift up its head, and a person should stand idly by, God forbid, and watch the child die. There is no prohibition in civil law. There is no obligation in civil law to help another person. However, according to the Torah, this is certainly prohibited, and we are obligated not only to save the life, but even to save a person's money. As the Rambam brings the Sifra, which after bringing all of these examples, states that even someone who can give testimony and thereby save someone else's money is obligated to give that testimony. And should he not, he is standing on his blood, in this case his money, and is not helping the person regain his money. As also said in the book of Leviticus, chapter 5, verse 1, Im lo yagid v'nosa aveinei, if the person does not give testimony, he is doing a violation and has to bear responsibility for his sin. The details of this commandment are explained in the Tractate Sanhedrin. The last mitzvah of today's portion is Positive Commandment 182, involving the refuge cities, as we discussed in yesterday's portion. That should someone murder another person or kill him accidentally, the law is that he is allowed to run to one of the refuge cities, the 6 cities which were set aside specifically for this purpose, so that the Goyel Hadam, the relative of the victim who wants to take revenge against the unintentional murderer, should not be able to do him any harm. And this is the commandment as explained in the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 19, verse 3, which states, Tochin lecha haderech, you should fix up the road, v'shilashtes gvul artzecha, and you should divide the boundaries of the land in equal portions, which means to say you should space these cities so it should be as easy as possible for the accidental murderer to run away to one of the cities. In addition, the Jewish court is required to prepare the way to make sure that the roads are smooth and they should be well marked and they should be as straight as possible in order that the person should not become uncertain on the way and thereby give a chance for the avenging family member to be able to reach him and do him harm. Signs had to be placed at every intersection clearly marking which was the way to the refuge city. Every year, on the 15th of Adar, the day after Purim, the Beis Din sent out messengers to inspect and make sure that the paths were all in proper working condition and in proper order, and there were no pitfalls or unclarities to keep the fleeing murderer from reaching the city. Should the road be in unworkable condition or for some reason be poorly marked and a person is killed, the Torah tells us that this was the court's responsibility. His death is on their hands, since they were required to make sure he had easy access to the city. This commandment applies only in the land of Israel. And it's discussed in the tractate Sanhedrin, Makkeh, Shkolim, and Seita. And this that we say that there are six cities of refuge is only until the days of Mashiach. But in the days of Mashiach, Ki Yarchiv Avayas Gvulcha, Hashem will expand the boundaries of Israel, and we will have additional cities of refuge, and Kein Yiratzon should be quickly in our days. Thank you for tuning in to Sefer Mitzvahs, a project of Sichos in English. For more information or to sponsor one of the installments, contact Sichos in English at area code 718-778-5436. That's 718-778-5436. And please join us again tomorrow.